Hi.
Hi.
I'm Evan.
I'm Addie.
And you are listening to the Speaking English Podcast, the place to be for anyone who wants to watch more movies or read more books. This is episode 174, and I once again forgot to look up what book club number it is. I think like 20-something at this point. This is book club 26.
Nice.
And joining us for book club is Aubrey. How are you?
Hi. Glad to be back on the pod.
Yeah, yay. Welcome back. We're here to talk about the book, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, by Jules Verne. This was my selection for book club. And one of the like three or four books that I took along with me in my suitcase to Spain. So I'm excited to talk about it for book club. But we'll get into that in 1 second. Before, how has your week been? How has your last 2 weeks been? It's been a little bit of time since our last episode.
They've been good and crazy.
Do you have big news?
I do. I finished my master's degree. I very successfully defended my master's thesis. Yay!
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was so scary. I did that on Monday. And it was Monday morning, like the meeting. So you write your whole master's thesis and then you send it to your committee and then you have to defend it to your committee in like a meeting. Like you have to present on it. And then they ask you a bunch of questions and to like make sure that you really understand what you wrote and stuff, I guess. Like you just have to prove to them that it's like worthy of being published and of like completing the degree. And that's terrifying. It's really so scary. I have not been that scared of like an academic event since I took the GRE to get into grad school like years ago. So I was a wreck seriously that morning. But I did my presentation fine. Sometimes, I don't know, do you ever feel like you just sit down like to do your task and you'd like tap into like a source of knowledge?
Yes. Yeah.
I just like zoned in when I was giving my presentation and it truly went so well. Like every time I practiced my presentation, I was tripping over my words. I was talking so fast. I was so scared about it. And I figured I would do the same thing like in the actual meeting, but I did not. Something came over me and I said it all perfectly. And at the end of it, I hit like the perfect time and I was so impressed with myself. And then I answered the questions fairly well, but also two of my committee members like got into a legitimate argument over something, which like never happens. And so that kind of has spread around the school. So for the next like
you're famous
next whole week of school, it's like juicy gossip.
Can we hear more about this juicy gossip?
Well, okay. So
explain your paper occurred.
If you could tell us what your master's is about.
Oh yeah. It's about, so I kind of run the data collection portion of a mentoring program that we run at campus or that we run at CSU with like at-risk youth. So I use data from that to look at like who benefits the most from these types of mentoring programs. Like does certain amount of risk exposure that kids come into this program with make them benefit more or less, that kind of thing. And I cited this one source about mentoring that one of my committee members was like, that's just not real. And I had to be like, oh yes, it is. And I like explained the legitimacy of it. And she goes, she literally was like, I mean, even in like my psych 101 textbook, it says that that's not real. And then one of my other committee members like literally started laughing and was like, I know exactly what source you're talking about. And that one's not real. And the one that Addie cited is perfectly fine. And like, it was crazy. And I was just sort of standing at the podium like, okay. And then anyway, it ended. I passed. So they kicked me out to discuss things. And then I went back in and they all were like, congratulations. And they clapped. It was such a nice moment, truly. And then I came home and my boyfriend's mom had sent me a giant cookie that said, you're a smart cookie.
Nothing goes harder than a giant cookie to celebrate something, I gotta say.
It was awesome. That whole day, I just felt like I was like on top of the world. Like everybody was congratulating me and it was just so fun. And then I had to go back to campus that night and I ran into a bunch of people who were like, I heard your defense went so well. And it was so cool to like hear that that was like spreading around. Yeah. But then the next day I came back to school and like every day of last week, it was constantly people being like, I heard that your committee fought. I was like, what happened? And I was like, yeah, it was like really kind of crazy. So this whole week has been really just kind of revolving around that event. But I feel great. I did some like celebrating. I had a big like Friendsgiving last night. That was really, really fun. Kind of unrelated, but it's still just, I don't know. This week has just felt very nice and like kind of the end of a chapter. So I feel great. And I'm so excited to be on break now because it was exhausting.
You're the master.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy that there was a fight. I've been to a few of those and I've never, like, they never do that.
I know.
At least not at CU, they don't do that.
No, like that was truly unprecedented.
Yeah, at CU Boulder, this would never happen.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. Yeah, it's the CSU problem.
It was really strange. I will not be having the same committee for my dissertation.
You don't want round two? You don't want to see the next round of that fight?
No.
I'm going to have to introduce you at the beginning of every episode as the master.
Thank you. That's fun.
How is your week? Or how has your last 3 months been, Aubrey?
Yeah.
It's been pretty good. I'm in my final times at school. Mm-hmm. This is the last serious semester I have, basically. And then next semester, I'm taking one class. Next year is silly semester. So I've got a part-time job to hold me through the semester. And then I have a full-time offer that starts in June. In the spring.
Oh my gosh. So, congratulations.
Going crazy.
So exciting.
In the springs too. Incredible.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It must feel so nice to just like have that lined up.
I also like want to stay so nice. In Denver. So this is like not. I'm just happy I have a job.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Colorado Springs is turning into more of a place for the young professionals than any other time.
Oh, I want to stay for my cat, basically. That's why I want to stay with my mom for my cat. But
yeah,
I don't know. I guess I could move back to the Springs, but we will see where this goes.
Yeah, you ever heard of Pikes Peak? America's Mountain? There's like a weird sense of pride in Colorado Springs is growing in me when I have to like talk about my home here in any context, because I'm not around any other people from Colorado Springs. So I have to lay down the law. And
that's so funny,
which is weird because I'm usually somewhat of a hater when I'm in America.
Yeah, me too.
But now I lean more towards stressing the pros than the cons, because
they got some sick mountains. They got some nice little parks.
It's like stressing the pros of Colorado as a whole, also, as well as like the specific pros of Colorado Springs. So I think
love Colorado.
The combo.
I'm very defensive of Fort Collins. Yeah. I'm like, nobody can say anything bad about Fort Collins in my presence.
That's a choice. That's a choice. When you tell people you're from Colorado, like, do you explain it that it's like the square state that's right in the middle?
Everyone knows Denver, actually.
Oh,
I say I'm from Colorado. They go, oh, Denver.
Oh, Denver.
Oh, Denver. Like, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Like that. Like Denver.
Nice.
People know Denver. All the Europeans know Denver, at least.
It's
a big city. It's one of the big cities.
When I was in Italy, I met this Italian guy who asked me where I was from. And when I said Colorado, he went, I love John Denver. And then he sang some Rocky Mountain High.
Incredible. I feel like it's Denver or John Denver, I guess, or like South Park.
That's so funny. Yeah.
Some Europeans also just know South Park when they hear Colorado. I feel like it depends on the age.
Yeah.
Depends, but that's great, Aubrey. You're moving up in the world.
Yeah, that's really exciting.
I'm doing my very silly semester. I honestly don't know what I'm going to do with myself. I'm a little bit
Silly Mester inbound.
You're gonna have
a I don't know.
You just gotta make it a silly spring semester. It'll be awesome.
Maybe I need like two part-time jobs. Maybe that's what I'll do. I'll get it done. Okay.
No.
Just enjoy. No,
I don't know what I'm gonna do.
Crochet.
Crocheting, because I strained something in this hand and I had to go to the doctor and they were like, yeah, you gotta stop that for a while and see if it goes away, and it goes away, so now I don't crochet anymore.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know what I'll do. Anyways, how's you, Evan? What's up?
The last couple of weeks have actually been pretty good. I'm branching out, doing some other stuff. I've kind of given up on the. This sounds bad because it makes me feel like I'm like not trying, but I've kind of given up on looking for fulfillment through my job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm there, I'll do my best while I'm there, but I don't think my specific job that I'm working at the school is gonna like open up any doors for me really as much. I'm just like starting to realize that, and I've like accepted it. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of pretty much decided that I'm not gonna renew for another year, regardless of what happens. Okay. And I'm kind of focusing on trying to do other stuff with my free time, which I think is like the mindset that most people come in here with anyways, because I think a lot of people do this thing to be like their fun year where they just, they're like, because the job is in fact very easy and they pay you a set amount that's like standard. So you get paid the same amount, however much or little you put into the job. So I feel like most people, in my experience, people that I've talked to, a lot of people kind of just come here to be in Europe and travel around and do lots of different stuff and just kind of work whatever. Mm-hmm. But so I think I'm trying to focus more on like other stuff. And then, because I mean, I'll have my work time, but that's only like a small portion, and I got to develop the other parts of my life while here. And so I've been working on that a little bit. I actually went on a little day trip yesterday to Toledo. It's a town that's just outside of the community of Madrid, but it's like, it's an old fortress town. It's one of them towns on the hill. But it actually has like lots of old history, because it was one of the capitals of the Moors when they were in Spain. So there's a lot of that influence, and I don't know. It's just cool to see the markings of history, and like the different hands that change in a town, which is what Prague is very much like that. But Madrid isn't, because Madrid, since its creation, has pretty much been like Castile has been like Madrid, you know, like that's the center. And it's been like that for like, that's kind of the history of the city is being that. And I kind of am realizing how fun it is to be a very old city that has been influenced by a bunch of different groups.
Very cool. Well,
Toledo, maybe not a bunch of different groups, maybe like two groups back and forth a little bit, but but yeah, no, that was cool. And I've been hanging out with some different people and meeting lots of other people. So
it's so exciting.
Yeah, it's been really fun because there's not like anyone here that I'm super close best friends with, I think. And I'm realizing that. But also it's a good opportunity to meet like a whole bunch of various different people.
Totally.
And I think I'm embracing that a little bit more here lately, and it's been helping me out a lot. So
good. I'm really glad to hear that.
I'm excited about it. And I've been watching lots of movies and reading a lot too. So I'm in the works of a new playlist on Spotify. I always work very hard on my playlists, and there's one that that's in progress.
Yay, I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah. But yeah, so stay tuned.
Is it gonna have another name that's like the evening, since you have the daily and the nightly? Not
No, not related to the daily, this one.
Okay. Totally new.
It's like fall, but specifically in Madrid. In fact, it's called Autumn in Madrid.
Oh, okay.
Because it's a different vibe than the normal fall playlist, I gotta say. Because it's still hot here. It's been, well, not hot, but it's been still nice weather. Mm-hmm. It feels like Colorado early September.
I'm jealous. It kind of feels like early September in Colorado right now, I'll be honest. Yeah.
Okay.
It's quite warm right now. A little concerning.
Definitely warmer than usual, yeah.
Mm. Okay, so let's get into the book. There were, once again, no mailbag entries for today.
Ay, ay, ay.
To my chagrin.
I'm putting in a timer because I actually do have something for the mailbag. So I'll put it in after we're done here.
Oh, okay. Awesome. That's incredible. Really exciting. Yeah. All right, let's get into it. This is Book Club 26, the 26th book we've read for this pod. And it is 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Mr. Jules. This was published in like 71. No, before that. It was in English in 71. Okay, so in French, originally published in 1869, actually. Jules Verne, a French man who wrote science fiction, I guess we can say, kind of the...
A lot of like adventure stories.
Adventure stories focusing on like technology, cutting edge technology, or maybe sometimes futuristic technology. So early science fiction, but specifically like adventure fiction based on that. This is a book about a submarine and it zooms around the world, piloted by Mr. Captain Nemo.
Mr. Captain.
I was just going to say Mr. Nemo, but I said, I cannot do that. He is a captain. Yeah, Captain Nemo. Well, it really follows a French professor who stumbles aboard and revels in the beauty of nature's majesty.
I don't know that you could say he stumbles aboard. He's kind of held captive.
He stumbles
he's
kind of
like dragged on board, forcefully drugged.
He does stumble aboard and then has to stay there.
Yeah.
Seemingly forever. But I don't know if I have anything more to say to introduce it. A lot of this is like speculative, but turns out pretty accurate. There's like times when I'm reading this where I have to do a double take and be like, would we have known that this is how this stuff works or not? Because there's some things that are like, that's not true. But then I remember, oh wait, he wouldn't have known that that's not the case. And there's a lot of times that was like the biggest thing that struck me with this one. But we'll talk more about that. But yeah, this was published. There was a specific guy that published a lot of his stories. Pierre Jules Hetzel. Who published a lot of Jules Verne's adventure stories, including his most famous works, such as this one, The Journey to the Center of the Earth, and Around the World in 80 days? 40 days?
Yeah,
80 days.
Too many numbers in these titles, though, I gotta say. Hard to keep straight. But what were your guys' overall impressions of this one? I'm curious to know.
I liked it. It was fun. The thing that definitely struck me the most was just like how imaginative it was. And I really liked the very long descriptions of kind of this like fictional world that's only like kind of fictional. Mm-hmm. that's just so cool. I don't know. A lot of the descriptions of the boat itself and then the things that they see underwater and the things they see when they're like in Antarctica, that was like absolutely the best part for me. I don't think I felt all that attached to any of these characters, but that is okay with me. Mm. It didn't really feel like the main point, I guess.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
Pretty good overall. It was a little stressful, honestly. And there were times where I was like, I would not be down with this. I would be stressed.
I would not be down.
Like the entire thing.
We'll get into this later.
Yes. Yeah. Like the way Ned acts towards the end when he's like kind of losing it. That would be me, but for the entire duration of the trip. Someone would have to just like put me down, just
yeah,
be done with it. Anyways,
I really relate, especially in like the sequence of events where they're like losing oxygen in the boat. And that I was like, that is actually like a worst nightmare of mine. Like, whoa, that was too much.
It was a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, overall, very good. Learned a lot about sea creatures, learned a lot of different sea creature names that I was looking up. Don't know how to pronounce a lot of them.
But, the amount of times I read the word triggerfish in this book. Everywhere they go, there are triggerfish. Are those real?
Was the other one with the C? Now I can't remember it. I don't know. There were a lot of very cool animals. Learned some stuff about the sea. Pretty good. Evan?
Yeah, I'm glad that you guys liked it, because I also liked it. And I didn't know if the long descriptions of stuff would be cool for you guys, because I was kind of looking at like various reviews, and a lot of people are not down with that, but that's kind of the whole point and fun of
it. I know.
Yeah.
I had the same thought, because I was remembering like all of our least favorite parts of the picture of Dorian Gray.
Oh yeah, that one chapter. Just like
a list of stuff that he had. And when you read the list of stuff that's in the submarine, I was like, oh my God, this is so Dorian Gray coded. But it works so much better in this than in Dorian Gray, I thought. I actually like genuinely liked it in this book. I liked getting so immersed in the boat and like the imagination of the whole thing.
I think it was because that one chapter in Dorian Gray was just like so out of place and like so disproportionately long compared to everything else going on in that.
Yeah.
I agree. But yeah, no, I did really appreciate that. And I thought that all of the characters, except for Captain Nemo, I thought Captain Nemo was interesting, but the three dudes that show up are like such stock base.
I agree.
So
like to the point where it was sometimes kind of annoying.
Yeah.
Not with Aranax as much, because he's like the narrator. So it makes more sense for him to just be like, whatever, like Mr. Scientist or whatever. It makes it, and him being the narrator works, because being Mr. Scientist, you, as the reader, you get all these descriptions that like develop the world, and it works. But a lot of the interactions between them are like NPC type dialogues.
Seriously. And their motivations are just so like bland. Ned Land, also his name being Land, and Ned him being Land. Obsessed with the land. I was like, I get it.
And the entire servant character, Conseil?
Conseil?
I mean, you could have just like merged Anorax and his servant together, and I don't think you would have lost anything.
Totally. And some of
we don't know anything about that band.
Seriously. And some of the dedication of Conseil to Anorax was like, bro, relax.
Just chill out.
I don't know, but Conseil, whatever, is definitely like on the spectrum, right?
I don't know. Just
the way that every time any animal, any fish, he's like, let me classify this to the digit. That was his only like characteristic. And it was like the only people that I know that are fixated and stuff such as this. Yeah. But
we've got a master of psychology here.
Yeah. Yeah, you are the master after all.
I see what you're saying.
Care to comment?
It was like his only personality was being an encyclopedia of fish.
And which, you know, extremely dedicated to his like master.
Yeah, and it's not ever explored as to why. It's just kind of
In the afterword, whoever was speaking in the after, whoever was writing in the afterword, did mention that it felt like a critique of Jules Verne, but I didn't really realize what he was critiquing. Like, I don't know. There's probably like some historical context that's lost reading today. I don't know what it is, but like, I don't know what type of person like this did exist, but it did feel like weird. His like lack of agency completely.
His lack. his lack of like of any anything. True personality yeah. or motivation yeah. beyond pleasing his master. It's like, man, he's just cardboard, really.
It was yeah. odd.
But I thought Captain Nemo was actually really interesting. And I love how you don't really don't know. You're never given the answers to more about him.
Right.
Which apparently there were answers given in a next book, like The Mysterious Island, I think it was called. Where Jules Verne like lays down his whole backstory. But yeah, I don't want to know.
I really like the mystery around Captain Nemo. And I've heard like the name Captain Nemo before. Like I knew that was some sort of iconic literary figure. I had no idea that he was from this book though.
Oh, really?
So it was cool. Like when he sort of introduced, and you hear his name, I was like, oh my God, this is the infamous Captain Nemo. And now I truly understand why. Like I really get why he's been such a, I don't know, like studied character for so long. He is very compelling.
I gotta say, one of your favorites, Captain Davy Jones from Pirates of the Pirates movies, is very Captain Nemo coded.
One of your favorites. I do love Captain Davy Jones.
Well, you talked about that on a recent episode, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about those tentacles, though. They kind of love me.
I love when he plays the piano with them. That's so awesome. Good use of your tentacles.
Well, every time they're talking about Captain Nemo playing his organ, I think of that.
So true. Yeah.
So apparently the Nemo is a play on the Odyssey when Odysseus tells the Cyclops that he's no one. Because Nemo means like no one in Latin.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So I think that's where the name comes from.
Oh, that's really cool.
But yeah, I just thought his character was so like it is at the heart of this and makes it more than just kind of what might the bottom of the ocean look like.
Totally,
even though that is super fun, but I think it adds an extra element. Like what type of person would be the one who like dedicates his life to just living underwater? And why?
I completely agree. And even though I wish that the other characters had been filled out more, I do think that they act as good foils or whatever the literary word is to Captain Nemo. Like, I like how much they sort of question him and like, even if they were on board at the beginning, just sort of like watching him devolve. Like, I think that their perspectives of what's going on with Captain Nemo and his boat really add to like, to all the intrigue and then to like the questions that you get to keep asking yourself after the book about like you're just saying, like, what does it really take to decide to abandon society altogether, you know, and be one with the sea.
And I mean, it makes you wonder like what happened to him or what did he do?
Yeah.
And why is this like random nation state ship like attacking him? And why does he take it so personally? And it's odd. And then why, maybe you guys can answer this for me, but why is there that thing where the people of the ship speak some sort of different language that only the people of the ship know, but then they're also like revealed to be Europeans? Like there's that one guy who screams for help in French.
Mm-hmm.
Like what? Did they just make up a language?
I guess, yeah. They turned their back on society, so they got to make their own secret club. With its own secret language.
It really is like very next level though. Like how long did it take them to develop their language?
That's what I'm asking. Like, do you go to language classes once you get on board? Or because then how do you say like, oh, we need to steer this thing to the right or something? Like
I get the impression that they all started this ship together. You know, like I think that it's they must have known each other for a while, because I don't imagine they enlist new recruits, because it seemed very much like when all of us die, we're donezo.
Right.
That's the impression that I got based on kind of the events and how they go to that like grave site. Because if I remember correctly, there was like they didn't dig the hole, like they had the area marked out for everyone.
Yeah, there were other graves there.
Yeah.
But like they wouldn't have to. I think they like had it a certain amount like ready there. So I think that it was just kind of the crew And then when the crew runs out, then so maybe they developed the link. Maybe they're like whatever their situation was in before they went on board their little submarine. They figured all of that stuff out. That's the impression that I get just based off of the book. But
yeah, that makes sense.
That would make more sense. I was thinking like there'd be like a Duolingo course that everybody has to go through. I guess it would add to that, like
for the first
year. Yeah, you're on board, like what you do at a job. You get onboarded at a job to, you know, complete this Duolingo course, wear some fancy clothes. But that would make more sense if it's just been that way since the beginning. It's giving cult. I'm getting sea cult.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, speaking of sea cults, there was certain elements of this that reminded me of some H.P. Lovecraft type stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
Which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, some of it was pretty spooky.
Yeah, like they're really big creatures living in dark holes and you can only see like parts of them.
Yeah.
I didn't like that. I'm uneasy.
I really liked the ocean intrigue, scary creatures and stuff.
I think it did a really good job because I watched yesterday the Disney movie adaptation of this one.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm.
And I think it did some things right, but I think it really missed and it would be hard to do with, you know, 50s movie magic.
Totally. Yeah.
But I think that's something that's a real benefit of how Jules Verne writes in like, giving you just enough that your own imagination really gets working, kind of picturing some of the stuff, and then like putting it into action in a super fun way.
I agree.
I think to the point where, I think to the point where when you're reading it, the action I think works so that even though a lot of it is descriptions and kind of building this world, I think it's done effectively enough so that when the description switches to action, it makes sense how it would work, how it would interact, and you can like picture it really well. So
totally.
Yeah.
I agree. I liked how much, I don't know, I really liked his writing style and the descriptions and how much it let you imagine things yourself, but also his imagination is just like off the charts. It's so cool and so fun. And I love this whole like under the sea world that he made, and the way he just kind of like thought of everything makes me feel like it must have been so much fun for him. Like it just kind of reminded me honestly of when you're a kid like playing a make-believe game and you're like, and also like this is what I look like and this is what I eat and this is where I get my food from and stuff like that, you know. Like him filling in so many of these details, it just felt to me like he was having fun when he wrote it, which I really loved. And the stuff he came up with was like adorable. Like Captain Nemo explaining that his cigars, he like makes his own cigars out of kelp. Yeah. I was like, that's awesome. I love that he does that.
And just kind of like the way that he answers hypothetical questions that Aronnax would ask. He's like, oh yeah, well, I thought of that.
Right, exactly.
If that's the case, then this would happen. And the reason why it works is because of this. And some of it, I think it's speculative, but a lot of it is, I mean, it seems fairly accurate.
Yeah.
The way that he uses electricity.
Yeah. Well,
the process of getting there is a little iffy.
It's a little...
He uses electricity to run everything. I'm like...
Yeah. That's what some of the footnotes of my copy was saying, was like when he's explaining exactly that, like the lever system of the electricity, the footnotes were like, some people are like, are actually doing this now, like, or at least trying to.
Yeah.
And same with when they go to Antarctica, at the time that this was written, nobody had been there before and nobody really had any idea of what it was like. But what Jules Verne came up with, like, which just speculated on, was like fairly accurate, which is so cool.
Yeah. That was funny because he was like, we'll go under the ice shelf and then surface right at the South Pole. And I was like, there's ice and maybe land at the South Pole. You couldn't do that. And I was like, wait a second. They wouldn't know that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So
cool.
That's so crazy.
There's another example that's like different but similar that really stood out to me. And it was then mentioned in the afterword that I was talking about earlier. That this came out way before Sigmund Freud was publishing his type of stuff. And the point where he's talking about the sharks and he does a Freudian slip saying something, something, sharks, like, because Aranax is like, I was really nervous about this, and then he was talking with his friends, and they did like a little Freudian slip, and I was like, wait a second. Like, it stood out to me reading. And then at the end, it was like, oh yeah, Sigmund Freud was not around at the time that this was written. Like, that was just kind of, and there's like, there's some certain things that Jules Verne did that was like predated.
Yeah.
That's so thing, which is more surprising to me, but like, because it's not what you normally think of, but that was something that stood out to me when I was reading it. And then afterwards, I was like, oh, yeah, that's a good point.
I think
another forward-reaching idea was the conservation issues he writes about, especially when it comes to whales and seals. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, at this point, there obviously were impacts on these animals, but it's even more pronounced now. And it's in part because of exactly what he's talking about, what Captain Nemo's talking about, where these animals are hunted and essentially driven into environments where they can't survive. And it's kind of like, that's what's happening now. Like, that's where it's experiencing that. And it's such a it's such a forward reaching and such a grand idea to be able to have seen that at the time that he was writing.
He is a clever guy. If I honestly really want to read Around the World in 80 Days and Journey to the Center of the Earth now, I've heard that both of them are a little bit better than this one. So I'm hoping that the characters are a little more like filled out in those two. And I also, even if they're not, I'm just like intrigued by his mind now. I'm like, what kind of wacky shenanigans did he come up with to get those people around the world in 80 days in their balloon? I'm kind of dying to know.
Yeah.
I know more about like what happens in Journey to the Center of the Earth, I feel like, because they made a movie or something, maybe.
They go to the center of the Earth, I bet.
Yeah, well, they do that for sure.
Really? You don't say? Do you think they go around the world in the other one too? Or?
They do. And there, I know that there's a movie for that one too, but I don't think I've seen that one. But I remember it being like on TV as a kid. So I think people like that one. I'm not sure.
Yeah. There's something about like the way that Jules Verne writes that I think that inspires people to want to make filmic adaptations. Mm-hmm. Because there's a Czech director that I really like, Karel Zeman, who kind of takes a lot of his visual influence from Jules Verne type stuff. And I think at least some of his movies are Verne adaptations, but just kind of like this imaginative, like steampunk style that goes into it. I think the way when you're reading it and kind of like the way that you picture it makes you want to adapt it, create reality from those images.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that was described that I'm like, I want to see that like actually laid out, especially the boat. I would really like to see like a detailed map of the boat. That whole segment to me,
like the cross section of
aquatic. Yes. There's so much stuff in there. That was the part to me that read the most like a kid playing a game. Like, oh, and by the way, my boat has another room and it's full of shells. And another room.
I would like to see like the giant animals that are sometimes discussed, like when they visit the massive pearl, the oyster. Is it a special kind of oyster that makes pearls? I don't know. and it's just like this giant thing on the bottom. Like, I want to see a pearl that's like, you know, big, like that kind of size. That'd be so sick. I mean, I would also be quite scared, but you know.
Yeah. But yeah, a lot of it was just really fun to visualize.
Oh, and Atlantis, the way they just...
I forgot about that. That was so funny.
That was one of the more wild things that was just like... I mean, just the way that the Atlantis is described in this is a way that I haven't really heard or thought of before.
Right.
But like, that would be really cool if that was the case.
Yeah, seriously.
It was kind of in the middle and then it just... Whoop. Sunk.
This is so random, but I haven't stopped thinking about it. But at the very beginning of the book, like before they even meet Captain Nemo or get on the boat, the main dude is like, yeah, I can swim. I'm like not nearly as good as Edgar Allan Poe. I think about that every day since I read it. I'm like, is Edgar Allan Poe like famously a great swimmer? Why did he say that? That was so funny. It's so random.
I gotta look this up now because you're right. And there's like multiple allusions to it too.
Yeah. I'm no Edgar Allan Poe, but yeah, I can swim. I'm like, no one has ever said that. I have never heard about the swimming abilities.
This is a thing, apparently. Edgar Allan Poe was renowned among his friends for swimming 6 miles upriver in the Charles River in Virginia when he moved to New York City for the second time. Oh, so, wow. I guess he was a swimmer.
That's so awesome. I love that.
I think the scene that has stuck with me the most is after that pod of whales gets attacked, and then there's the young mother with the calf that's dead, and they go in and they just start milking the whale and collecting its milk. And I was like, God.
And then they drink it. And they're like,
I can't.
Yeah. That was weird.
That was so bizarre.
Yeah, I didn't like reading that part.
The wonders of the ocean.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, would you be sort of like a Ned Land, or would you be an Anorak person where you're just chill when you get kidnapped on a special submarine boat?
You know, I was really thinking about that. I would definitely not be a Ned Land. I think I'd be somewhere in between. I think part of me would be like, well, I'm absolutely not going to live on this boat forever. Like, that's just not going to happen. As soon as I see a chance to escape, I will, because I just would miss land. Miss my family and stuff. But in the meantime, I think I would be like enjoying being down there. Yeah. I think I would really like actually like this like sea adventure of this. I love the ocean. So I think it was really cool. And I also would be very trusting that Captain Nemo was like not gonna keep this up forever. Like I really think that in the back of my head the whole time I was reading this book, I was like, they're not actually going to be captives on this boat. Like, it's just not going to happen. Captain Nemo is going to, like, drop the game, you know, things are going to blow because he's a weird guy. So I think in real life, I would also be thinking that. What about you guys?
Also, if I knew that the book was 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, after 20,000 leagues, I would simply leave the boat. That's one thing.
You wouldn't do 20,001
leagues? That's just what I thought was so funny. Every time he was like, we had traveled about 10,000 leagues aboard the boat. Yeah.
16,780.
Like, we're halfway there. Yeah. The title's a little bit of a spoiler in that way.
That's true.
At a certain point, you know that they gotta get out.
And like in the style that it's written into, I guess, like all in the past tense.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, well, clearly something changed then for this text line to be discovered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank God for the portion when they're suffocating. Imagine if it just ended there, if they all just died that way.
That'd be crazy.
But that was genuinely the point where they almost reached catastrophe more than anywhere else. Because that would have just killed everyone.
Yeah.
You know?
Scary. What about you guys? Would you be down with staying on the boat?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I would be like Ned Land towards the end where he's like, we can get off, we can swim, we can swim. Yeah, we can swim the entire 20,000 leagues.
Nah, I think I wouldn't mind. It would be cool.
Yeah.
They do spend like almost a full calendar year there. And I think that at a certain point it would get old, but like all of the stuff of like the food that they just replace normal land food with seafood and make it just like different types of land food.
When he was
so cool to me, like I would enjoy that a lot. Yeah.
I loved that. When he was first describing like the meat on the plate that like they're about to eat, and he's like, surely this meat came from the sea. I'm like, have you never eaten a fish? Why are you so amazed? Surely people were eating fish at this time. But then when it was described, like, no, it was like very much like a steak made of a turtle. I was like, oh, okay. Never mind.
Fishing was not invented until the 20th century. That's crazy. what else about this one? Yeah, I think overall, you know, it's just a nice scientific tale. Science fiction.
It is a nice
little tale.
I think it really works as like science fiction, though, because I guess we're kind of talking about like that distinction earlier, but I think it works as science fiction because I think the assumptions it makes based off of its speculative science really let you kind of wonder. And I think, you mm-hmm. know, we were talking earlier about how much they kind of turned out, but mm-hmm. also just the way that it lets you like speculate on how things would be in a super fun way, I thought.
Nice. I thought so too.
That I think it really falls into science fiction because it's, I think, the best science fiction, you know, asks these questions of like, if technology develops in this way, what will it enable? What will it change? And I think these thoughts of like all this money that he has because he just goes to shipwrecks and picks up all the money. Like, yeah. and this is like what we were also mentioning earlier about how he's like answering the question. He's asking and then answering the questions regarding like what ifs. I think just the way that it kind of all adds up, you know, allows for these fun moments in the story where it's like, what if this happens? Mm-hmm. Well, then this is how we'll deal with it. Like there's like the theoretical stuff when Nemo is talking to Aronnax about that sort of thing. But then it's mm-hmm. also just like Jules Verne playing this game where it's like things that just happen. And then certain things Nemo's like, yeah, this is light work. We'll just do whatever. Like, watch and learn, bucko. And then other times it's like genuinely concerning and they have to deal with these problems that arise. So
totally.
I think that's where it finds most of the fun. Cause I think this is a very fun book, even if the characters can be like a little annoying and frustrating.
I agree. It was very fun.
Yeah.
And I would read more Jules Verne in the future.
Yeah, thank you, Jules. Yeah, and I guess just another point real quick. You know, the writing style, I think, is very readable by today's standards, you know?
Nice. I agree.
So do you have a final rating for this one?
I think I would give it 3.5. Very, very fun. Could have been filled out more. Okay. Could have been more emotional, but okay. Very fun.
I gotcha.
Yeah, I'd say 3. There was just, I guess the other thing is there was also just a lack of women doing anything. It's just a boys club down there. So.
There were no women.
Get a mermaid.
A mermaid.
Put a mermaid down there.
It would have been so cool. A mermaid. I feel like the only mention of a woman was when we were like, Captain Nemo has a photograph of a woman in his room. And
it's like, ooh. A mysterious woman.
Yeah, not a whole lot of women.
I think this book needed a couple mermaids that played
sirens or
something. Yes, dude. And went to raves. If this book had mermaids, easy 5 out of 5.
But they have to be like the vicious kind of man-eating, like not little mermaid nice things. Like they gotta be yanking people off the boat, drowning them, you know?
Honestly, reading this book kind of made me want to read like the Odyssey again. Like I like sea adventure, but where are the evil mermaids? Mm-hmm. I'm going back to the source.
Give me evil mermaids or give me death.
Yeah.
In any sea adventure tale.
Mm-hmm. Evan, what's your rating?
I was going to give it 4 out of 5. And I think I still will. But you do raise valid points. Because there's no half stars here. I think it's more an 8 than it is, or more a 4 out of 5 than it is a 3 out of 5. Because Jules Verne is just so cool. I just think that Jules Verne is a very interesting and cool guy. And
I totally agree.
The amount of stuff that is stemmed from his personal imagination is incredible. I think that's on full effect here. And that's the biggest strengths and assets that this book has.
100%.
It's almost like what Mary Shelley did with Frankenstein or Bram Stoker and Dracula. It's kind of like that.
Hmm.
Mm. So influential.
So influential.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. And I think in some ways it might be hard to separate this book from the rest of, or just like the general idea of Jules Verne,
mm-hmm.
and his body of work. But I think this is like a good example of it. So until I read more of his stuff and find one mm-hmm. that's better, that works mm-hmm. better, then yeah, it's a 4 out of 5 for me.
We should read Around the World in 80 Days in like a book club in the future. Cause I'm very curious about that one. I just have this hunch that it would be my favorite. Cause I feel like it's gotta be the most like innovative. Cause it's got this element of like a race type of situation, you know?
Mm.
I don't know. I just, that one excites me.
Sounds good. Well, isn't it your turn next, or is it Aubrey?
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
It is my turn next, but I don't really want to read 2 Jules Verne's back to back. So I've had my next one picked out for months.
Okay, and
I really,
yeah, you did mention that, yeah. So mm-hmm. speaking of, what's it going to be?
Okay, I really want us to read Kindred by Octavia Butler. I'm actually not really sure how you say that word. I think it's Kindred.
I think it's Kindred.
Or is it Kindred? Like
it would be Kindred, unless okay. there's 2 E's. Is there 1 E or 2 E's?
There's 1 E.
Yeah, Kindred.
Kindred.
Kindred Spirits. But the book's just called Kindred by Octavia Butler. I really like Octavia Butler. She mostly writes series, like sci-fi series. I think that this is one of her only standalone novels. Mm. So that's why I picked it. It has time travel, but also slavery. So get ready. Buckle up. I'm really excited.
Incredible. Yeah, okay. Sounds good.
Yay.
We'll get to work on that. Get reading. Get cooking.
Yay. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, and that'll be our book club, next book club, which would be number 27, I believe.
Nice. 27 books. So us.
Yeah. Cool. So for next week, we are in Noirvember, I must say.
Oh, yes.
How would you feel about doing a double feature for next week?
I'm down. It's Thanksgiving break, so I've got some time.
Oh, yeah. For some people, maybe.
Yeah.
But there's 2 movies that I've seen both of them already, and one of them is a staple. But as far as classic noir goes, I think we still need to get you to watch one that you really like. So these are 2 options that I think are going to hopefully yield some good results.
Nice.
The first is Double Indemnity, which we've talked about a handful of times.
I was hoping you would say that one.
Yeah. The second one is another Humphrey Bogart leading.
Nice.
But in a very different vein to The Big Sleep. It's called In a Lonely Place.
Okay.
And I think, and that one I've only seen once, and it's been a while, so it's one that I've been wanting to rewatch anyways.
Cool.
So I think between those two, we should get some pretty good material. They cover similar ground in some ways and different in others. And I think it'll be a very good program that'll yield lots of good discussion. So,
yay. The quest for Addie's perfect noir.
Yeah. a fun concept. I think it works out.
Yeah, it is fun. I'm very excited about that.
For another Noirvember celebration. Woo-hoo. And since we took a little long with this like episode coming out, I think a double feature would, you know, make sure that we get some more noir pictures in there.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Thanks for coming back for another episode, Aubrey.
Good to have you. Thanks back for having me. I'm glad the book club survived. You moved to Spain.
Yeah.
Me too. I love the book club.
Always here to read more books. I do want to say that I started the last book that I brought with me that I hadn't started yet, which is East of Eden. So in the next month or two, probably at the end of December, in the new year, I'll hopefully have that one read. But I read the first chapter. I started it 2 days ago. So yeah,
I cannot wait to hear your thoughts.
Best yeah, book ever. Cool. I have very high expectations. So hopefully it lives up to the expectations.
I truly think it will. I don't really have any doubts about that.
Awesome. Sounds good. Okay, so yeah, we'll be back with our noir double feature next week. Thanks. And yeah, which means all that is left to do before we go is to recommend an album. For anyone new here, we recommend an album at the end of every episode that we think that you guys should listen to. So Addy, do you want to go first? Do you have an album to recommend for this week?
Yeah, I really want to recommend a Fiona Apple album. I love Fiona Apple. I think I've recommended a couple of her albums on here before. Today I'm going to recommend Win the Pawn, and I might have recommended Win the Pawn before, I'm not sure. This is her second album, came out in 99, and it's just so genius. It's 1999. Just like
1999.
Yes.
Sorry, continue.
To be clear. It's just so, she is just so smart. Her lyrics are so thoughtful and so poetic and so like righteous. So it's really fun to listen to if you're in a kind of an angsty mood, which I tend to be around this time of year. I just really, really love her. She's just such a genius. She's very like subversive, I guess. Like she really, she's not the traditional type of famous artist. Like she very much rejects being in the spotlight, being perceived very much like like very genuinely, like a lot more than the average famous person. And that just sort of interests me about her. Cause she was just gonna be well known cause she's that smart and she's that talented. And I love her. And I love this album. This album specifically is just gets better and better to me all the time.
Nice.
Yeah.
Incredible. Aubrey, do you have an album for this week?
Heard you. It's Palomino, the Child of Summer edition by First Aid Kit. That's what I've been listening to.
I love First Aid Kit.
They're good.
They're so good.
They're just jamming. It's great. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. That's all I got.
I saw them live this summer.
No.
Their voices are just so insane, dude. Like, oh my God, I just love First Aid Kit. Great rec.
Incredible. My pick is Surprise Surprise from Wise Blood. The album In Darkness, Hearts Aglow, came out 1 year ago, like yesterday or the day before.
Mm-hmm.
But I've already recommended that one. So I'm going to recommend her a different one, which is called Front Row Seat to Earth, which is the one that was before Titanic Rising, which is a 10 out of 10 masterpiece, best album ever made. But I had kind of like maybe not neglected this one. Well, actually, yes, neglected this one. But this one on its own actually is quite great as well. And I think when I saw her live, she played two different songs from this one. And I listened to it all the way through and all over again. Then, and I've kind of continued to listen to it, keep a couple of them in the rotation, because I think it's a really great album. And I think that starting here, she's kind of actualized the sound and continued to develop it ever since. And I think that's the start of like when all of her music has been really good since then. So I'd like highly recommend everything starting there, honestly.
Nice.
But yeah, specifically this album, I think does work quite well, and I'm a big fan. Front Row Seat to Earth,
love it.
Cool. Yeah, so that's what we got going on for this book club. We did it. We read another one.
Go team.
We've hit our quota.
It was an incredible feat. I honestly didn't think we'd do this far.
Book Club 26, read a book. Talk about it. Check.
Read any book.
Our next one is Kindred by Octavia Butler.
Yep.
Yes.
I've been wanting to read this for so long, so I'm really excited. Awesome.
Sounds good, yeah. So if anyone else is interested and wants to read it, go check it out. Start it right now. And then by the time you're finished, you're finished with it. We may or may not have an episode out.
you never can.
Depending on how quick your pace is compared to ours.
Yeah.
But yeah, that'll be our next one. And we got two noirs coming in hot for next week. Those are Double Indemnity, and directed by Billy Wilder, and In a Lonely Place, directed by Nicholas Ray, who's the same guy who did Rebel Without a Cause. So okay, our second cool. Nicholas Ray picture we're watching for the pod.
And I loved that movie.
Yeah, that'll be coming up next time, probably next week. And we'll see from there. So nice. Thank you, one and all, for giving it a listen. Do great things this week. We all believe in you.
Yes.
And we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye now.